This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. It has been a year since the United States Supreme Court overturned the constitutional right to an abortion in its decision on Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization. More than a dozen states have used the decision to ban abortion, leaving about 22 million people without access to the procedure nationwide. Since then, there have been horror stories of women trying to access abortion, some of whose fetuses were non-viable or even dead. My guest is Jessica Mason Peeklow, Senior Vice President and Executive Editor of Rewire News Group and co-host of the Rewire News Group podcast, Boom Lawyered. She has been our go-to guest on the issue of reproductive rights. Welcome back, Jessica.
Thank you so much for having me back.
So this past year, we have seen just awful stories. There have been women who have even testified in front of Congress about their horror stories, as I put it. What has this past year been like for you in terms of the biggest fallout from the Supreme Court decision last year?
Well, first of all, we knew that the landscape would be chaotic in the wake of the Dobbs decision. But I think even those of us who have been in this space for a while underestimated the extent of the chaos that would flow. You mentioned the stories of people who were unable to access care, put in very life-threatening situations, traveling immense distances. We had an understanding that that would happen in the abstract. But what we saw was daily, sometimes stories of just extreme extremity is what I would say. People unable to access care, chaos, confusion, and the anti-choice movement really using this as an opportunity to seize even further power. And we're also seeing that it has a destabilizing effect in our democracy in general. When we put the attacks on abortion rights in context with the larger attacks on bodily autonomy, it becomes clear that this is part of a larger strategy to try and erase certain folks from the ability to fully participate in civic life.
Now, it has also generated a confusion in states, I understand, where the procedure has been banned, because the lawmakers writing the bans are not medical professionals. Of course, if they were, they wouldn't ban it in the first place. But how badly written are the state-level laws, and how confused does that leave abortion providers or even just doctors confronted with somebody who arrives pregnant and is in serious distress?
And this is really the heart of the care issue and the care crisis that the Dobbs decision has wrought. These laws that are passed in gerrymandered states, like the Mississippi law that eventually went up to the Supreme Court in the Dobbs case, as you said, they're not written by medical providers. They are more often than not pieces of model legislation that are cooked up by advocacy orgs with a particular legal goal in mind. As a result of that, those laws have a lot of vagary in it. The language isn't clear. Sometimes there are what feels like for providers, conflicting mandates within a particular abortion ban. So what that leaves is patients at the mercy of bureaucrats, whether in a longer arc in terms of the judges and attorneys that are fighting in the courts over these laws, or in an immediate medically acute situation, hospital administrators deciding when or if their doctors can even intervene in a medical emergency. And this is really the situation that should terrify anybody and everybody, regardless of their personal or political feelings on issues of reproductive health and choice, because pregnancies are not guaranteed. They have their own mysteries and are individualized. And as a result, any person who's pregnant can find themselves in need of a medical termination. And a medical termination is an abortion. And so what we are seeing is that even folks who their entire lives have considered themselves quote unquote pro-life or advocates in anti-abortion spaces are now personally at threat. Their lives are at risk, and you know, up to a few folks who are hospital administrators to make a decision on that on their behalf. That's how far we've slid in a year.
Right. There are women who have, as I mentioned, testified in front of Congress. One was a woman in Austin, Texas, whose fetus died, and she couldn't get a doctor to remove the remains of the fetus from inside her body because Texas is one of those states. There are, you know, people all the time who have things like ectopic pregnancies. I've experienced one years ago, and I can't imagine what my situation would have been if the doctors that were charged with my care hesitated because they weren't sure if they had the right to surgically go in and remove and, you know, improperly implanted set of cells that was hemorrhaging inside me. I mean, that is the kind of thing, right, that has been happening. It's only a matter of time before somebody dies.
I agree. And that's a terrible thing for us to even be discussing as the result of a Supreme Court decision, right? I mean, this is not a place that we should be. And I think it's also important to note that when providers have spoken out about the impact of these bans in states that have these bans in place, the states have come after them. I'm thinking specifically of Indiana and Dr. Caitlin Bernard, who treated a rape patient from out of state. And that she was faced with sanction and did nothing wrong except try to just fulfill her duties as a doctor. And so this is a really terrifying place that we find ourselves in just a year after Dobbs. What will happen if Republicans get their way in 2024 and enact a national abortion ban?
What about and I want to get to the policy issue in the future of reproductive justice, but also in just currently, 1 year after Dobbs, what about the cost of acquiring an abortion? Because, you know, those women, those people who have looking to terminate a pregnancy, living in states where there's either existing bans or partial bans, or it's confusing, and realize they have to travel out of state. It's become really expensive, right, for people to access abortion. And of course, expensive meaning it affects financially those people who are most vulnerable, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it was, you know, abortion care was already not cheap for many, many folks in this country, in large part because so many insurance plans do not cover it. You know, and so that is an issue. But as a result of clinics closing in large swaths of the country and patient load then shifting to states and localities where abortion access has been protected, alongside of that, the cost of the care has ballooned because, in addition to just the hope and a prayer that you can actually get an appointment slot now in some places, there is, as you mentioned, the cost associated with getting there. So in some instances, I'm in Colorado, for example, and we have seen an over 800% increase in patient load as a result of the Dobbs decision. And that means that we're seeing patients, for example, from as far away as Florida. That's a flight. That is a long flight. That is a multi-day trip. You are away from your job. You're away from your family, because we know that most people who have abortions are already parents. This is an economic crisis. And again, designed, I think, you know, the larger picture is, you know, yes, the anti-choice movement will talk about that this is about abortion, but really this is about driving people out of the workplace too. I mean, we have to be talking about all of these fights that we're seeing from the conservative movement within the same breath, because they certainly see them that way.
What about the state of medication abortion, which has also been under attack nationwide? It had been the option that people were turning to in the wake of the Dobbs decision, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and what we know about medication abortion is that it's safer than Tylenol, right? And this is a multi-pill regimen that most folks take in the earliest stages of pregnancy. And as soon as the Dobbs decision came down, we immediately saw attacks on medication abortion that functioned to try and ban it nationwide. States had already, before Dobbs, put their own restrictions on the use of medication abortion. For example, not allowing telehealth appointments or what have you. But what we saw from the anti-choice movement after Dobbs was an attempt to pull mifepristone, which is the main drug in the two-drug regime, from the marketplace, to sue the FDA and say that after 20, you know, plus year, or, you know, after 20 plus years in its current state in the United States, that it is unsafe and was rushed to market. These arguments are legally absurd, and 10 years ago even wouldn't have the legs that they have now, but for a very successful campaign by conservatives to instill as many Trump appointees as possible. So the fight for abortion rights and access in protected states is very much about a national fight, whether it's to pull mifepristone from the market, as is this current case that's going on, or it is a national abortion ban that Republicans have said they plan on enacting should they take control in 2024.
The U.S. Supreme Court really, I think, lost even more legitimacy among the public since the Dobbs decision, right? The Dobbs decision came before all of the evidence around the way in which Clarence Thomas has been found to be in the pocket of billionaire Harlan Crow, as per ProPublica's revelations. But how badly did the Dobbs decision impact the legitimacy of the court?
I think it is devastating, and it should be, because the Dobbs decision is fundamentally a lawless decision. When the advocates for the state of Mississippi first petitioned the Supreme Court to take the case, they didn't ask the court to overturn Roe and Casey. They asked the court to uphold Mississippi's 15-week ban under existing law. The request to overturn Roe only happened after Amy Coney Barrett ascended to the Supreme Court bench. And folks need to remember that, because the game changed from that point. There was no transparency before the Dobbs decision. The federal courts were in agreement that laws like Mississippi's that overturned Roe were unconstitutional. There was zero disagreement. And so what the Dobbs decision did was really pull back the curtain and say, these are political decisions. The court took the Dobbs case and rendered the decision that it did, not because it follows the law or it even follows the instances where the Supreme Court has reversed precedent. The Supreme Court did what it did in Dobbs because it could.
So what next? Let's talk about what's coming up. If the Republicans take the House and the Senate in the next election, the likelihood of them legislating a complete federal abortion ban is pretty high, right?
Yes, it is. It's a guarantee. We are starting to see that in the current candidate pool from Republicans. But the one thing to know is that this is an issue that the anti-choice movement will demand Republicans deliver on. They will have no choice.
The GOP seemed to have lost a little bit of voter support in the last election, in the midterms, rather. When it seemed that in places even like Florida and Georgia, they lost some voter support because people were it didn't play well. The overturning of Dobbs didn't play as well as they thought it would among their voters, right? Has that not taught them a lesson?
I mean, you would think so. One of my favorite statistics is that abortion rights is more popular than the Supreme Court. And that's because it's true. More people support the right to abortion broadly than they do the current situation that is the Supreme Court and what it's doing to this country. So I think the reality is that the vast majority of people in this country understand that abortion care is part of reproductive health care. And there may be debates on the margins of accessibility and whatnot, but by and large, people want care available, particularly in emergency situations, particularly in situations where, you know, traditional abortion exceptions had existed. There's not actually widespread disagreement about that. And what's even more interesting is that in the most conservative places, you mentioned some of them, I'll add a couple others, Wisconsin and Kansas, when voters get the opportunity to vote on this issue, they vote overwhelmingly to support abortion rights and access. So when we talk about abortion bans being anti-democratic, that's another reason why they are. They don't reflect the will of the electorate, and they certainly don't get enacted when the will of the electorate is followed.
Jessica, give out the website for Rewire News Group.
Oh, sure. We are rewirenewsgroup.com. We are the nation's only nonprofit media organization that focuses exclusively on reproductive and sexual health rights and justice issues.
Always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Always a pleasure.
My guest has been Jessica Mason-Piklow, Senior Vice President and Executive Editor of Rewire News Group and co-host of Rewire's podcast, Boom Lawyered. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access these and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.